When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, Paul Fontaine alongside Ryan Frederick here for In the Clinch MMA podcast on the Fight Game Media Network and Free Feed. And I want to thank you all for listening and make sure you subscribe to whatever feed you're listening to. And before we get too much into this, we got some breaking news. And for our breaking news, let's take you straight to President and UFC. What is his title?
You were saying President, and I go, UFC President.
UFC President Dana White. Here we go.
All right, guys. Here's another announcement for UFC 300. Holly Holm, she was inducted in the Boxing Hall of Fame in 2022. In the history of the women's bantamweight division, she is tied for fourth most wins, six most significant strikes landed, and has the fourth best takedown defense at 78%. Holly Holm is one of the baddest women to ever compete in combat sports, ever. She's fought all the nastiest women in the world, in boxing and in MMA, except for one. Holly will be taking on the only person in U.S. history to win back-to-back Olympic gold medals in judo. The UFC has officially signed Kayla Harrison. Kayla's 16-1 with 12 finishes. Her takedowns, her ground and pound are nasty, and this will be the first time she will be competing at bantamweight. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That fight is also at UFC 300. See you soon.
It's a pretty big deal, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Holy crap. The biggest thing for that, for me, like I knew you told me right before we started, but at bantamweight.
Yeah, at bantamweight. Yeah,
so she's going to go down to 135. That's crazy because I know at one point she didn't want to go down to 145.
But, well, I mean, she was doing 145. She did that Invicta fight, and I think they were planning the cyborg fight at 145 if that was ever going to happen. But yeah, that's a big deal because we were the, you know, and we'll talk about it later, the PFL card that was released, and you know, a lot of people were expecting Cyborg against Kayla Harrison, and nobody knew what was going on and wondering what Kayla's status was. And I think I don't know if I put this out there publicly or not, but I was like, Kayla's a free agent. She's been a free agent. She wasn't still signed with the PFL. She did her fight there at the end of last year, and that was it for her. And this comes as a kind of a big shock, you know, kind of unexpected out of nowhere.
Yeah, no kidding. Like I don't remember you saying that she was a free agent. So
yeah, I might have said that to somebody privately or something like that. I know our good buddy James, you know, Brown, that listens to the show me and him talk all the time. And we were talking about it, I think a week or two ago. And I was just like, she's a free agent. And I knew that. So maybe I didn't put it out.
So right there is obviously why they didn't do, I had heard that they couldn't get Cyborg or whatever to agree to the fight. Well, turns out obviously, you know, they didn't have Kayla. So, I just looked it up. She did have the one fight in Invicta in 2020, which I kind of forgot that she fought there at featherweight. But every other fight she's done has been lightweight, except for her last fight, which was a catchweight at 150.
Yeah,
so clearly she was getting ready to go back down to featherweight.
Yeah, when she was doing that, that was along the time when there was the heavy rumors of her signing with the UFC to fight Amanda Nunes.
Yeah,
possibly either doing it 145 or 135, and I mean, I guess.
And then Amanda lost the title, so then she resigned with PFL.
Yeah, I think that's how it was. Or I think PFL still had matching rights on her, and I think what it was just that whatever UFC was going to offer, PFL was just going to match it or go higher. So they just kind of just like, okay. And then, Nunez lost the titles. And it kind of was like, oh, well, you know, that went by the wayside. But then again, Kayla Harrison lost after that too. So it kind of just, the whole idea of that kind of went by the wayside. But yeah, here's Harrison finally in the UFC. And we've talked about how if she ever came over, she could be a big star. She's because she's got the look. She's got the skills.
She's got great promo, personality,
everything, everything. And it's kind of interesting because now we have, you know, like we said, Bantamweight, and we got the shakeup at Bantamweight. And there's also, you know, Amanda Nunes kind of opened the door back up to maybe possibly coming back. And maybe this is something that'll intrigue her.
Especially if she wins. I mean, she beat Holly Holm, and especially if she finishes her, you go right to the title fight.
No question.
Yeah, absolutely. Juliana Pena, sorry, you know, you're out of luck.
I mean,
wax Raquel.
There's a lot of we'll get into it. Raquel Pennington, the new UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion. And if anybody listen to me on Wrestling Observer Radio, you know, we talked a lot about Pennington as champion, myself and Dave and Garrett. And you know, let's talk about how, you know, she's a weak champion, and you know, much like, you know, I said about Shauna Strickland, it's like you have a champion here who's not the best fighter in the division, and it's just a matter of, it's like, okay, you know, there's probably two or three fighters at least better than your champion. It's just a matter of, are they going to get the shots? And with Harrison fighting in April, you know, there's a lot of talk about Pena and Pennington possibly June. So I don't necessarily think like Harrison comes in and finishes home. She leapfrogs Pena, because you could still do a title fight in June, and then maybe, you know, Harrison and whoever's the champion October, November, you know, November, maybe at MSG if that's the, you know, an idea.
That'd be a great spot.
Idea. And then, you know, maybe perhaps in the, you know, Harrison becomes champion, maybe, and Nunez, you know, has some time off and recover. Maybe you could coerce her out of retirement for that fight. And here we were the other night talking about how bad Bantamweight is and how weak it is. And honestly, this kind of injects a little bit of life into the division. Still a weak division, but it definitely kind of, business kind of picked up in the division just a tad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially if they can get Nunes to come back, obviously. And you still got Miesha Tate kicking around. Obviously this pushes her down, which is probably for the best. You know, cause I think they would have tried to rush her into a title fight, and I'm not even sure she would beat Pennington, let alone, you know, Pena. I wouldn't give her almost any chance against Kayla Harrison. Although that'd be a fight you could sell for sure. You know, if they wanted to do that, because again, there's a lot of these names that, you know, people would love to see fight. And obviously for people that aren't familiar with Kayla Harrison, you know, to see her against these big names would be good. And then, you know, then she becomes a bigger star. And then all of a sudden, like she's every bit as, I mean, she's very much like Ronda Rousey, like, you know, similar style, probably a better fighter, than Ronda was, I would think. You know, it's hard to say because, you know, the level of competition is probably similar, honestly. It's just that the competition got better in UFC, and so where PFL was, you know, at the time Kayla was competing was probably a similar level to what it was at when Ronda was competing in UFC. Like, it was still kind of developing, in my opinion. But very huge news, honestly. You know, on a week where we did have a pay-per-view. And was there any other news that came out? Because he did say something about, you know, I got more breaking news. And I know we'll talk about it a little bit later. But
No, that was nothing else.
That was the big one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But we'll have to talk about UFC 297 right now. And we already mentioned. So You know, and there's not much we're going to talk about with this fight, but Raquel Pennington beat Myra Buena Silva to win the vacant bantamweight title. It was a really bad fight. Boring. Raquel Pennington just kind of did enough to win, basically. I mean, there was no question about who won. Some of the rounds were close, but pretty much everybody had Raquel Pennington winning. All the media scores were for her. A couple people even gave 10-8, fifth round. I didn't quite see it that way, but, it's pretty clearly Buena Silva just kind of gave up. I thought almost
gassed after the third.
By the end, she was literally laying on her back, knowing she'd lost the fight and just not really wanting to fight anymore. So,
yeah, I mean, one of the worst title fights in UFC history. Can't say it was the worst in a world where Silvia Orlovsky 3 exists and Rose Namajunas and Carla Esparza 2 exists.
God, yeah.
I even think it was slightly better than that dismal Adesanya Yoel Romero fight, but
Ankalaev and Blachowicz.
Yeah.
Another bad one.
Anything involving Tim Sylvia.
Yeah. Well, those luckily were kind of before my time. And he had the great fight with Randy Couture. So,
yeah. Well, he had the great fight taking a beating from Randy Couture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was, but it was compelling as hell because,
that was one of the most compelling ass kickings of all time in the UFC. So,
well, yeah, because it was very similar to the Silva Sonnen fight in a way that, he obviously took more punishment than Silva did, but it was the kind of thing where Couture was in control the whole time, but you just thought, well, if Silvia just gets up, he might be able to do something. And
I made the joke because I was at that UFC 61, the Silvia Orlovsky 3, and it was the Tito and Ken Shamrock, their second fight.
Oh, yeah.
I made the joke. I was only 20 at the time, but I had the fake ID. But I made the joke that Silvia Orlovsky 3 took more years off my life than the alcohol I consumed after the fight.
That was the fight before the third one was when they went on TV, right?
The second one had that controversial stoppage in less than a minute. Everybody thought Herb Dean stopped it early, and probably so. But Tito was going to thrash him. But
that's right around the time I was kind of starting to pay attention to UFC.
They got that big third fight with that big TV rating, so it all worked. It all worked out for the best for them. But absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, back to Pennington and Silva. Less said about Silva's showing the better because it was bad. But Pennington, she's always struck me as somebody who's solid but unspectacular. Good, but she's not great. And her biggest flaws came out in this fight, which is she'll get super good momentum on the feet with the combinations, and instead of just keeping a distance and landing and maybe even possibly finishing, she goes right into the clinch. Does it all the time. And even her coaches were yelling at her about it, like, stop doing that. But she does it literally every fight. It's like that's the only way she knows how to fight is to rush forward, land a flurry, and clinch. And then she was doing this entire fight, which makes for boring fights and makes it where, you're not – she's not a scary opposition. And people now Kayla Harrison – and Holly Holmes beat her twice. I know Pennington beat Misha Tate back at UFC 205, and Misha retired afterwards. I think she was just mentally kind of done. But the Misha Tate that beat Julia Avila a little while back, that Misha Tate would thrash Raquel Pennington.
I think so. She'd just take her down.
Yeah. Donnie would beat her. So I don't even think Pennington's, Pena would beat her too. I think she might only be like the fourth or fifth best fighter in the division, but she's the champion, and she's had a solid record, but very vulnerable champion. And the less said about this fight, the better.
Yeah. The only other thing I'd say, you brought up Holly Holm. January 2020, so 4 years ago, she lost to Holly Holm. She was 10-7. Had lost three or four, probably like one loss away from being cut. And then she wins six in a row and is now the UFC champion. So, whatever you want to say about whether or not she's the best fighter or not, she is the champion, and congratulations to her.
Yeah. Congratulations, yeah. sister. Yeah.
And she did what she needed to do to win. I think her fight. And the last thing I'll say about this is, I mean, she did what she needed to do to win. And Mayra Buena Silva, you know, she wasn't ready. That's all you can say. So,
yeah.
But the main event, and we talked about this a little bit, in DMs and stuff. And I think I like this fight a lot more than you did. I was, and maybe it was just because the rest of the main card had been so kind of, the show started off great. And then it just kind of hit a lull in the middle of the show and carried over into the main card. And by the time we got to this main event, this crowd was churning on the show because, I mean, bad fights and also Canadian men went 0-7. And I don't think the people were too happy about that. Obviously nothing UFC can do about that. They can't control the outcomes, but they came out and Sean Strickland was the huge crowd favorite to start.
It's almost like Vince booked the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, he's Dana's boss technically. So
he ain't doing shit. I think his job these days is just to come out for photo ops.
Yeah.
Photo ops like today.
Paycheck. Yeah.
Yeah. Just sit at home and collect a paycheck.
But no, I mean, obviously he didn't have anything to do with it, but yeah. The crowd was totally for Strickland at the beginning. And I think there was like fuck DDP chants at some point.
No, there wasn't fuck DDP. They were yelling fuck Trudeau all night.
Well, I know I heard that. There was fuck you Curtis. I know that. In the Chris Curtis fight, I heard that. There was, because they've even brought it up. Like they said, Daniel Cormier, these Canadians are so nice, but they got filthy mouths.
Well, they like to do play C in the fit, you know, by the time.
By the time the fight ended, they were all. I mean, it's not like they hated Strickland, but I think they sensed what was happening, and and they saw that plus they were getting a good fight, especially compared to some of the fights that had come right before it. So by the end of the especially the fifth round was really good and it was compelling, and you didn't really know who had won. I like you had it 3-1 DDP going into the fifth, so really Strickland needed a finish, but some people had it 2-2, including one of the judges, so you didn't really know. And Strickland did as much as he could. He wasn't going to finish DDP, but he definitely won the fifth round. And so it was a little bit compelling, and of course buffered it his dramatic read of the main cards, and with some of the scores had gone earlier in the show, you weren't quite sure. DDP wins the title, 48-47 on two cards for him, and 47-48 by Saul D'Amato on the other card. And again, the weird thing was, it was like one of the rounds that everyone thought was close actually went all for DDP. So it was.
It was the third round that ended up
deciding it, right?
Yeah. And the third round, I think the third round was a lot closer than people kind of gave it credit for too. So
yeah. Well, yeah. And it was, I think it was more just, you could kind of sense the momentum that DDP was having. So I think that's why more people, were kind of, when these fights are going on, like, I don't know about you. I'm sure you don't do it this way, but I kind of do. I kind of like almost at the beginning of the round, you kind of have a feeling about how the fight's going, and so it's, you kind of feel like, oh, this is so-and-so's round to lose unless something big happens. So if, they're just kind of going back and forth and one guy's kind of got momentum a little bit and the round ends and it's like, you kind of have to decide and you're like, well, I think, maybe DDP did a little bit more there. But if it was like, if you watch the round isolated, you might look at it differently. So
I tend to watch rounds just isolated.
So. Yeah. I know that's the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
But I think, even factoring in the score and, you're definitely not supposed to do that, but I do feel like that happens a lot, especially with fans voting.
And everybody goes, it's like, oh, the commentary, they sway you one way, but I've learned to, drown out the commentary for the most part. And a lot of that's experience because of having been to shit 200 or so UFC shows where you don't hear the commentary, you only focus on the fight. So I've learned to drown that noise out.
Yeah, yeah.
usually, and you know that because you'll say, "Did you hear what he said on commentary?" He's like, "No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't catch it." You know, so.
Especially in a close fight because you're trying to pay attention to what's going on. Sure. Plus you're writing. You know, you're keeping track. You're doing play by play for Wrestling Observer, so you kind of have to look at it with your own eyes as opposed to listening. But you know, you had said going in that Strickland was a beatable champion. I mean, you said that the night he won the title. And you certainly favored DDP. By the time the fight started, this was basically a toss-up. I know it was -110 on both sides when they did the ring introductions, but I think just before the show started, I think I got DDP at like -105. So he was a slight underdog.
Yeah.
But it's he's a champ now, and this sets up big fight with Israel Adesanya, who all of a sudden is ready to come back. And I mean, they set this fight up really well, after DDP beat Whitaker. So I assume we're going to go to this probably. Yeah, I would think maybe, it won't be June, because, if Connor's going to fight, but unless Connor doesn't fight in June, then it could be the main event.
We'll talk about that
later.
But there's also two pay-per-view events in June. So.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
We'll talk about later too.
In the news. Yeah. Anything else you want to add on this main event?
But yeah, my thoughts on the fight. It's one of the, you enjoyed it better than I did. I thought it was that good, but unspectacular. Like if I'm like labeling it with star ratings, it's like, to me, like a solid 3.5-star kind of type of fight.
Yeah, and I gave it 4.5, but
type of fight if you're going from 1 to 5, that fifth round was really good and compelling. Mm-hmm. And I had it 3-2 Duplessis, not going to argue against anybody who had it for Strickland because it was close fight. Yeah. And I know Strickland afterwards, especially not necessarily immediately afterwards, but Sunday and then even more so yesterday, he was talking about that cut that was open in the fourth round, and he said it was from a headbutt. And I don't remember a headbutt in the fourth round. I haven't rewatched to see if there was. Obviously it got missed and didn't get called for a timeout. But what Strickland was saying, I got headbutt in the fourth round, and the doctor should have said it, and I would have told the doctor can't see, and it would have been a no contest. And it makes me wonder, like, do some of these fighters not understand the rules of the fight that they're in?
Because they would have gone to the scorecards, right?
Because A, if they stopped it for the headbutt for an accident, which would have been considered an accidental foul because those are accidents. Yeah. And he said he couldn't see, and the doctor stopped the fight. At that point, because it was past the third round of a title fight, they would have went to a technical decision and they would have scored the fourth round. But they would have probably scored the fourth round 10-10. So it would have come down to the first three rounds. Well, Duplessis was ahead on two of the three scorecards. So Strickland still would have lost. If Strickland had said after the round, hey, I can't see. He told the doctor, I can't see, and it was from a headbutt, but obviously it wasn't called, but he just said to the doctor, I can't see, and the doctor starts to fight. Strickland loses by TKO because of the cut.
Yeah.
Does he not understand, at that point, like you're in no man's land. You got to kind of suck it up and go. And I hear that for so many fighters. Like, it's almost like they don't understand the rules of the fight that they're in.
He's not
the sharpest tool in the shed, and we're not even going to get into stuff he said. We're going to ignore that. I know people were wanting, I know there are some people, who, because we didn't really get into this on Observer Radio, who might be listening, what my thoughts. For my thoughts, I'll stick to a private. I'll stick to privately because I don't really feel like rehashing something that happened almost a week ago now.
Well, and not only that, I just don't even want to give more airspace to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so. Neither do I. It was really bad situation. But anyway, the outcome of this fight, a lot of people would think, you got an immediate rematch because it's a split decision, close fight. The fact that Dana flat, and Dana even said he scored it for Strickland, but at the same time, and usually when he says stuff like that, you know, you almost think his first immediate thought is immediate rematch. But the fact that he said no immediate rematch and that we're going to Adesanya also kind of tells me that, you know, all these people who thought what Sean Strickland was doing, making him a star, tells me the pay-per-view number that they were getting wasn't enough to justify going to an immediate rematch. And he might not be the star everybody was claiming he was, because you always say, like, you know, he's got that Colby Covington kind of where he appeals to the wrong type, but he appeals to the type that don't spend money on shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, like, all those, you know, the.
So they'll watch embedded, but they're not going to pay for his fights.
The faceless blue check marks.
Yeah.
Check marks, you know, that hide between, you know, Johnny numbers, you know, yeah. on Twitter. Like, those guys, those aren't the people who, but they might be the loudest on social media, but they don't pay for shit. They pay for Twitter, but they don't pay for anything else. So, which tells you, like, I can't say this. I can't, like, report this with 100% fact, but it feels like, based on some things, like, that there was some blowback to stuff he said.
There you go.
Even though they weren't gonna publicly do anything about it, there's, you know, that there was some blowback. Not anything major, like people threatening to pull out, but it's like, hey, you know, it's a bad time. It's a bad time for that stuff to be happening for them too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Too, especially so. With, you know, with that, you know, the recent merger and, you know, the stock the
merger
price kind of taking a bit of a hit.
Deals are coming up.
Yeah. Right. Deals,
sponsorship deals. And then just, you know,
yeah. And then you got this
and
guy.
And then everybody in the country, no matter what side you're on, being kind of on edge about everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, this is going to be this year is going to be insane.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, everybody, sort of it doesn't matter what side you're on the political, everybody's got a comment about something and every company, you know, whether it's a right-leaning company or left-leaning company, they're going to complain, you know, left-leaning company is going to complain about somebody in a company doing a right-leaning thing, and a right-leaning company is going to complain if they go too much to the left. That's just how this world is. We're at a point where there's no pleasing anybody.
Absolutely.
So, but, you know, enough of that talk.
Yeah.
But it looks like Duplessis Adesanya next. You know, Duplessis was talking during the week about making the quick turnaround for UFC 300. His face after the fight told me that UFC 300 might be out of the question, but
yeah,
there's going to be some more shows.
Yeah, he had some damage to his around his eye.
Yeah,
it was almost shut at one point. Yeah, but.
And you know, as of now, you know, we still don't have a main event for UFC 300, but we've got a lot of fights for the show, and there's been some fights they tried to make for the main event that haven't come to fruition that we'll talk about later. But Duplessis, you know, and he feels a lot like Strickland. Maybe not as vulnerable as Strickland, because I think Duplessis is a better overall fighter with better overall tools. Strickland, for as much, you know, as many fights as he's won, he still feels rather one dimensional. Walking forward, head up, you know, standing straight forward, jab, front kick, but really had trouble defending the takedown. Was leaving himself open to getting his body kicked the shit out of, and those left hands were landing for Duplessis, and they were impactful. And ultimately, those were what made the difference in the fight.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and I think without Adesanya, his wrestling is underrated, and as well his defense. So he's not going to get hit as much as Strickland did, yeah. I don't think. So I think Adesanya will probably be favored. And in fact, I think the early lines are that he is. So, you know, we'll see when that fight happens. And I think that's going to be a big fight. I really do.
Yeah.
So we might as well go right into our three stars, because I don't think there's anything else on this card we need to talk about other than, except for one thing, which I'm sure will come up in our three stars.
Yeah.
So I'll let you start.
You want me to go
sure,
first?
Sure, yeah.
Number one, far away, should be Jasmine Jesutovic.
Yes.
That was one of the most lopsided beatdowns in UFC history. And of course, you know, Priscilla Cachoeira. Where can we start with her? Start with this one. We've always talked to, you know, I've never been a fan of hers. I've called her on this show the dirtiest fighter in UFC history because she's fish hooked. She's eyed gals. She's done a lot of dirty stuff, and she's not been super impressive. You know, her debut was also one of the most lopsided fights in UFC history when she got massacred by Valentina Shevchenko.
Very reminiscent to that.
Very reminiscent, possibly even worse, maybe. Who knows? You know,
maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think the strike count was worse for sure.
Yeah, it was on the same level, but you know, to top it all off, this week this fight was supposed to be at 125 pounds. So literally the day before weigh-ins, Jesutovic gets a phone call saying, you know, and she told the story. She's like, it was Mick Maynard. And anytime the matchmaker's calling you the day before weigh-ins, it's usually not good news. So here she was expecting the fight to be canceled. And then Mick told her, yeah, Cachoeira is not going to make weight. Can y'all do it at 130? And she talked to her team, and she agreed to 130. Well, once the team starts calling them back to say 130, sorry, guys. She's told Cachoeira can't even make 130. So she literally just said, fuck it, we'll do it at 135. They both weighed around 133. And then she said she was going to make Cachoeira pay for it, teach her a lesson. And what a lesson was taught there. Just absolutely lopsided. I think, you know, when they showed the strike count at the end of the second round, it was like 228-4, something like that. Insane numbers. But and just Jesutovic gets a submission in the third round, Anaconda choke. Just incredible showing.
So wait, before you do your second and third, I got the strike counts here. 326 for Jesutovic to 26 for Cachoeira. And this was the first fight ever refereed in the UFC by Matthew Rocha. And the previous fight you referred to with Valentina Shevchenko against Priscilla, the strike count in that fight was 230-3.
Yeah.
And that was the last fight that Mario Yamasaki ever refereed in the UFC.
Because everybody was giving Yamasaki shit that he should have stopped the fight.
And Matthew Rocha should have stopped this one.
Yeah, like, in the second
absolutely
round.
Absolutely should have stopped this one, and he didn't. And I don't know why. But I don't know if it's possible we never see Matthew Rocha again either.
Yeah,
but
this fight was so lopsided that we had a rare 10-7 scorecard.
Yeah,
in the second round.
This was really bad, and I don't know. Like, she kept fighting. I mean, you can say that, and you know, and she was even, you know, but she wasn't doing anything, and she's done. Like, we're not going to see her again.
Yeah. Number two for my three stars, I'm going Jimmy Flick.
That's a good one.
Him and Malcolm Gordon, they had a fun little fight. Gordon was dominant in the first round, and then you know, he tried to take down the second, and Flick was able to kind of reverse it, get the arm triangle, got the submission, and a big win for Jimmy Flick. And you know, and he cut a really great post fight promo. You know,
it he was did. Just yeah,
kind of fun. You know, Jimmy Flick. You know, if he could put together, you know, some wins, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be a title contender, but he's got some personality, and he'd be a guy to kind of, you know, have on some cards. And you know, you could, if he wins, you could expect him to have a nice, passionate post fight promo. And I'm going to look here because I kind of want to leave you some. I'm going to go number three just to leave you a few. I'm going to go Movsar Evloev. You know, sure. Arnold Allen had a strong third round, but those first two rounds for Evloev was just – it shows why everybody finds him a threat, because his wrestling was ridiculous. Took Allen down a lot of times. Allen was able to pop up, but Evloev kept taking him down. And the takedowns allowed Evloev to land some hard shots. And I saw Dana White criticize this fight afterwards, you know, called it a bad fight. I go, like, that was not a bad fight. That was actually a really good fight. The only downside for Evloev is, while he got the win, moved to 18-0, it was still another decision. And that's all he's had in the UFC.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get a title shot if all you're going to do is get decisions. You're going to find yourself like Magomed Ankalaev, and he needs to have an Ankalaev, you know, kind of showing next, you know, if he wants to put himself in the title mix. But it, you know, to go 18-0 and to now have what, 8-0 in the UFC's featherweight division, that's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, but he's got to get a finish if he wants to win the title. So for my three stars, I'll start with Jillian Robertson. So we mentioned that the Canadian men were 0-7. Well, the women were 2-0. You mentioned Jasmine earlier, and Jillian Robertson submitted Pollyanna Viana. Typical Jillian Robertson fight. You know, she's probably the best submission ace in the UFC for women, and one of the best overall, really. It's very workmanlike. Once she gets you down, it's kind of like, who's that? I always forget her name, but the one who pretends that she's Brazilian, but she's not really.
Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, Mackenzie Dern. Like how she used to be, but she isn't anymore. That's what Jillian Robertson is. So yeah, that was nice to see. And she was so happy to be fighting in Toronto, I think, for the first time. In UFC, at least. So, you know, big win for her. And it was still early in the night when it felt like Canada was going to do something. And that was the last. I'm looking at a lot of Canadian flags on the right side of the topology page here. But yeah, big win for her. Second star, I am going to go with Sam Patterson. And I will say, he got a submission 2 minutes into the first round, rear naked choke. I was excited because you had done your parlay. And Sam Patterson, I think, was the only underdog on your parlay, and he won.
Well, Duplessis was two.
Oh, yeah, slight, yeah.
Slight, yeah.
But yeah, Patterson was, you know, a decent-sized underdog. I think he was, like, plus 130 or something like that. So I was the one I was kind of worried about, and he won. So I was thinking, oh, man, we got a good chance of winning this one. And didn't quite work out, but, no. You know, it, yeah, nice win for him over Canadian Johan Lanisse. And yeah, I think there's a bright future for Sam Patterson out of the UK. And third star is kind of tough, but I think I'll go with Neil Magny, even though, you know, the first two rounds he didn't look too good at all. Mike Malott dominated the first two rounds. He was well on his way to scoring a win. And then Magny, you know, he knew he needed a finish in the third round, and he poured it on, and Malott got tired. And then at the end of the third round, Magny took him down, and he knew he needed a finish, and he just was not going to stop. And he was punching, and Malott was trying to back away, but he wasn't fighting back. And the ref gave him a lot of time, and he just wasn't. And it looked like it might, you know, the round just might end, and we might even get a draw, you know, like Magny might get a 10-8 round, but then the ref stopped it with 15 seconds left. It was a good stoppage. Can't complain. Malott, he just, he was in over his head. as you talked about on Observer Radio, and I think you may have even talked about it here last week. Like, a lot of people were picking him a lot here, and we did too, but it was just a little bit too much of a step up for him, and that happens. I do find that happens, especially in Canada, because they're trying to get these fighters on the cards in front in their home country, and somebody's got to be in that feature spot, and you don't want to put them against, you know, like, I don't know, I'm not gonna, you know, like, you don't want to put them against like Sam Patterson or something, you know, like, you want to give him a big name.
Yeah.
And so that's, he gave him Neil Magny, and probably thought, you know what, he's kind of on the backside of his career, and he probably is, but he's still top 15 fighter. And what is he, second or third all-time winningest fighter now in UFC?
Yeah, something like that. And then most UFC wins all-time in welterweight division.
That's never going to get passed, I don't think. I mean, if it does, it's going to be a long time. You know, guys don't stick around as long anymore. They don't fight as often anymore. Yeah. Magny, remember that one stretch where he fought like 15 times in 4 years?
No, it was more than that. Or
was it? Yeah.
Because he fought 6 times in 1 year and I think five times the next year.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, it was. That's going to be a tough record to break. I mean, Max Holloway is up there too, but and certainly at welterweight. So, yeah, those are my three stars. There's some other people you could have gone with, but I kind of was on the Dana White page too. I didn't really like that Avloev-Allen fight either.
Yeah.
There's a couple of these. They just kind of. It was a combination of how the fights were going and the results and just the fact that they're going to decisions. By the time we got to that co-main event, I was so done with this show. And
it was late too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, well, I watched it late anyways. So I think it was like, I didn't finish the show till like 2:45 AM.
I mean, even so, us here on Central Time, it was midnight before the main event was even starting.
No, I'm saying 2:45. I'm talking Central Time. Like, yeah. I started watching at 9:30. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, but what I'm talking about is like, it was midnight by the time the main event was even started. And a lot of these shows are done by midnight Central Time. So that's
Everything on the main card went to a decision except for the Malat fight, which ended 15 seconds late. So really, it's, I don't know if it's the most fight time ever on a UFC main card other than the 6-fight ones they've done. Yeah. It might be because with two title fights and other two fights going the distance, then another one going 14 minutes, 45 seconds, it'd be kind of hard to be a longer one.
Yeah, I'd have to look because there's been a couple fight cards with three title fights. And I think I remember that UFC show in Anaheim. I think it was 2:14. When it had three title fights, and I think all three title fights went the distance.
I think the longest
Woodley and Maya.
Oh God!
And that was Jones, a bad fight too. Jones and Cormier. I think Jones and Cormier finished in the fourth round.
The one that I remember as being really long was the one for Brazil, where Ronda. I think it was it Ronda and Beth Cahaya. Where I think it had 6 or 7 fights on the main card. 7
fights because they had to put because it had that Brazilian Ultimate Fighter Brazil finals, but because of the contract they had for the show in Brazil, like those two finals had to be on the main card. But if you took those two fights and took two of the main card fights that were on it and stuck with a 5-fight main card, it would have been a really bad.
Yeah,
it would have been a really bad. I mean, the show still would have ended up drawing because of Ronda Rousey, but it would have been probably the worst main card in UFC history.
No, it was drawing because of Beth Cahaya. Come on. I just remember it being like 11:30 our time, and they're going to video package for these two Brazilian fighters we've never heard of.
Yeah.
Who, like, I'm sure now they're stars, but back then we didn't know who they were, and we're like, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, just get to the Ronda fight already. I want to go to bed.
I know people who were covering the show John Pollock being one of them, and I've covered shows on the East Coast before. You always get out there late.
Yeah.
They were talking about it was like 3:45, 4 a.m. before they were getting out of the building. So,
well, that was there was an MSG show 1 year where Dave was covering it live, and I ended up doing Observer Radio because he couldn't get out of there in time.
Yeah.
So it was me and Filthy did Observer Radio with Brian.
Yeah, I did. I remember I remember, you know, I was at the last show in Toronto that they did before the pandemic. I don't think it was that late when we got out. I think it was about 2:30 when we got out there. Oh. I remember a show I did in Brooklyn, that horrendous Brooklyn card with Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy. And it was after 3 in the morning before we got out of there, because that one went forever in a day too. So.
Well, we've gone forever talking about this card, so let's finish up by running down the wrestling results and our results on our prop bets, which is mixed bag.
Yeah. I want to say one thing about Ontario, too. Please update your rule set. They were still using the 2003 rules, I don't think it really affected anything, except in that Evloev-Allen fight when Allen, he landed some knees when Evloev had was putting a hand down, and Mark Goddard called the timeout. Mark Goddard didn't take a point, but they were ruled illegal, which under the new rule set, that wouldn't have been illegal because Evloev was blatantly putting his hand down. So, but please update your rules. But anyway, back to the results of the card. Kicked off with Jimmy Flick submitting Malcolm Gordon in the second round with an arm triangle. Fight was a catchweight fight because Gordon missed weight, but Flick got the win. When I think Gordon, they didn't really clarify, and I haven't seen him. He took his gloves off at the end of the fight. I mean, I think somebody mentioned, is he retiring? But we don't know. We don't know. And a lot of times fighters take the gloves off immediately because they might have a broken hand. They want to keep the swelling down or whatnot. So don't know. But yeah, Flick got the win. And then we had the Jasmine Jusudovich's third-round submission, and kind of choke over Priscilla Cachoeira that we talked about. Then closing out the early prelims, we had Sam Patterson's first-round submission over Johan Lennies. Then the feature prelims kicked off with Jillian Robertson, second-round TK over Pollyanna Viana. Then we had an interesting split decision here. Ramon Tavares beat Sergey Sadé. Now, they fought the first we talked about last week. The first time they fought was the Contender Series, and Sadé won the fight, controversial first-round stoppage, in a fight that Tavares missed weight. Well, Tavares also missed weight for this fight, almost 4 pounds. It was a crazy miss, but he won a split decision. But this was a robbery. Sadé won the fight on every single media scorecard, and I don't see how Tavares won the fight. I thought he won the first, but Sadé clearly won the second and third, in my opinion. So, yeah, robbery right there. And then we had another close fight the next fight, featherweight fight. Sean Woodson got a split decision over Charles Jourdain. I thought Woodson won the fight, but it was back and forth and a good fight. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And then closing out the prelims, Garrett Armfield won a unanimous decision over Brad Katona, 29-28 across the board. For the main card, kicked off with Mavzar Evloev, unanimous decision over Arnold Allen. Then we had Chris Curtis split decision over Marc Andre Barrio, 237-20, 30-27 scorecards. And then there was a 29-28 scorecard for Barrio. I thought Curtis won it. I scored it 29-28, giving him the second and the third. You know, the fight ended up being very good by the end, and they had a hellacious third round. That was really back and forth. But yeah, big solid win for Curtis. Then Neil Magny, third round TKO over Mike Malott, and then of course Raquel Pennington, unanimous decision over Myra Brena Silva to win the vacant UFC women's bantamweight title. And then Dragos Duplessis, split decision over Sean Strickland in the main event to become the new UFC middleweight champion.
Just wanted to say the Sean Woodson fight was funny because when they did the fighter announcement, neither guy could hear buffer. And I think Woodson thought he had lost. For some reason, Sean Woodson sounded like Charles, because that's how they say the name, Charles. Yeah. It's not Charles. Yeah. Charles Jourdain. Sean Woodson, Charles Jourdain. Like, I guess he thought he lost. And and the fight was close enough that he could have lost. And the fans booed that because I think they thought that that buffer said Charles Jourdain. And here they're holding up Sean Woodson's hand. So that was kind of funny. And yeah, I did have the Sadé fight for Sadé as well, so I was kind of surprised by that one. And I also had Katona winning over Armfield. But that fight, I think the majority of the media members scored it for Armfield, but there was a few that scored it for Katona. How'd we do in our parlays? I know, but tell the people.
Yeah, my 5-5 parlay didn't hit, but I think on our prop bets, we were 3-2.
Yep, Yeah, that's right. So we, I think the one we missed, I think you had, we got the over on Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland, the over on Pennington and Silva. Oh, I had Mike Malott winning, which was, he didn't win. And, I had Katona and Armfield going over 2.5, which they did.
Yeah. I had Pennington and Silva Bueno going over 3.5 rounds, which you know, Drake put $700,000 on,
yeah,
on Sean Strickland. And I said this on Observer Radio, but he should have put it over Pennington. Pennington, Bueno, Silva going over 3.5 rounds because that was an easy bet.
Mm-hmm. So was the Katona one, in my opinion, too, because there's no way that fight was not going the distance. But yeah, it was So we did okay. We didn't quite win. You know, if you had hit that parlay, that was the big one, and I put money on it too, and I was feeling pretty good. And I screwed up because I have my ROI bit picks, which I do all the time, and I had Jimmy Flick as the favorite, even though he was an underdog. He was a +165 underdog, but ROI told me to take him, and I accidentally wrote down Malcolm Gordon. So I didn't realize till I went back and checked the results and my bank account, or you know, my balance account, that I had put down a bet on Gordon. I thought I bet on Flick, and I'd also done a parlay that had Flick on it too. But luckily there was another fight. I think I had Malott in that parlay as well, and he lost. So either way, I was going to lose that parlay, but I had a kill. Like, I'd have been really upset with myself if that hadn't come through. So, we had fight of the night went to Strickland and du Plessis, and the finish bonuses went to, you know, the performance bonuses went to Jillian Robertson and Jasmine Jazza DeVicious, which were rightfully deserved. Show did almost an $8 million gate, 7.9 million basically, 18,559 fans at the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. Unclear whether that's U.S. or Canadian gate, but I think it's U.S.
I think they said U.S.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's about probably 11 million Canadian with exchange rate. So that's pretty, what, average ticket price of about $600.
Yeah.
So that's pretty insane.
And, also on the show, which I didn't put in the notes and I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Frankie.
Frankie Edgar was announced as the first inductee for this year's UFC Hall of Fame. You know, no brainer selection right there.
Funny that he was there.
I mean, you know, and my dad was asking me the same thing. And what they do is they always bring these, you know, they have an ulterior motive. So they decided, and they did the same thing to Cerrone, and they did the same thing to everybody they inducted. They decide who they're going to put in the Hall of Fame, and all of a sudden they decide a show to bring these people in for guest appearances. These old time fighters like Frankie Edgar, he did a Q&A. A session on Friday before the weigh-ins. It was him and Mark Hominick and Sam Stout, and Frankie did an appearance at Boston Pizza by the arena before the fights. And, you know, of course, you know, he's at the show, but they always kind of disguise that as like, okay, we got him here this weekend. We're going to make the announcement because they want the fighters in the building when they make the announcement because they want to get that live reaction. And then of course the fan, they want to do it where the fans can react to them and all that. It always makes for really good moments.
Yeah. And you could see him tearing up, and they did obviously a really nice video package. They always do. And very rightfully deserved. I almost thought he could have gone in last year, but you know, he'll go in this year in the modern wing.
Yeah, so they need people for every year. So.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. No, yeah. no problem. Like, it's not, you know, I think we just thought that, you know, New Jersey would have been the perfect place to announce it, and they had a card there in May last year. So it's kind of one of
the you know, for all the criticism that UFC rightfully gets and rightfully deserves, the one thing they always do well is how they handle the Hall of Fame announcements and
absolutely
and just the Hall of Fame in general. So
so good on Frankie. You know, he may get in again in the fight wing, certainly for that Maynard
the fight. Second great Maynard fight, you know. Those were some great fights.
In fact, I could almost see them putting that fight in too, but I mean, there's a lot of fights they can choose from. It'd be kind of cool though to see Frankie and Gray together again on the thing. So glad you brought that up. So coming up this week, there's no UFC, but we do have our our upcoming fights. And there's not a ton this week, but Thursday night, we got an FFC 71 show on UFC Fight Pass. So that from Lima, Peru. There is an ACA show from Russia, or it's from Chechnya, actually.
Yeah, it's got Magomed Bibulatov, in the main event, who's a big former name, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Recognizable name. Did he ever fight in the UFC? I know they put him on Ultimate Fighter. Yeah, he fought in the UFC. He was 1-2.
Yeah. So he's in the main event against Thomas Deke, who is another, I don't know if he's a former UFC fighter, but I know he fought in Bellator. I know the name. I'm just looking at. Oh no, he didn't. I just know him from, I guess, from ACA and Fight Nights. Fight Nights Global. I used to watch that quite a bit, so that's where I recognize him from. But yeah, so it's a big, you know, relatively big fight in the main event. Triller TV has got a couple shows: Hexagon MMA and DCS 90, both on Friday afternoon and evening. Just looking through this, we got a DAZN fight, Octagon 52 from England. Not too many.
Got Jack Cartwright on it, who UFC wanted. You know, a lot of people thought he should have been outright signed, but they put him on Contender Series in 2022, and he lost to Jose Johnson. And now this is his second fight since then. So
he'll be back at some point, probably this year, honestly. Especially if he wins this fight.
Series, yeah,
If he wins that fight, and then everything else looks.
There's
like
a. You know, for fans who know this name, there's a show on a Saturday it's on an internet pay-per-view. It's called Fight for 18 from Charlotte, but it's got Tanner Saraceno on it. You know,
the former tough enough guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah. He looked like he was going to be something, and just never really panned out.
Didn't he fight our buddy Filthy Tom, or wasn't he supposed to, or something like that?
I don't think so.
Or something where they involved.
Which fight is that?
Maybe
which
it was a wrestling.
Fight for IT18. I got it here. I just want to look because I think it was Matt Riddle. I think it was Matt Riddle he was supposed to fight.
Or something. Maybe it was a wrestling thing that they were involved in.
When you look at his profile pic though, he looks like Seth Rollins. He beat the GOAT two fights ago. Did you see that?
Yeah, Sasha Plitnikov. He looks like a Seth Rollins Adam Cole hybrid.
But he's won two in a row now, so he may be heading to the Contender Series at some point. He's still pretty 33. But yeah, I know I was following him and I did watch a couple of his early fights. You know, and it kind of looked, but then he lost to Jonathan Webb and Gregory Rodriguez in LFA, and that kind of stalled his momentum. But I mean, really looking back, those are pretty good fighters, to be, you know, to be losing to on the regionals. And since then he's won 3 of 4. So, and of course with the win over the GOAT, by stoppage. So,
now there's two other
LFA show on, Saturday night. On UFC Fight Pass from Peru. And what was the other one?
This is from Brazil. It's in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Yeah, what did I say?
The LFA, you said
Peru. Oh, I said Peru. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Cajamar, Brazil. What's the other one? Because I don't see another one.
And then one on a...
One Fight Night, Friday Fights on YouTube, that one?
No, one 165. It's on Sunday. January 8th, 3 a.m. Eastern time, internet pay per view. But
it's from Japan.
Yeah, Shinya Aoki against Sage Northcutt.
Holy shit!
Yeah, and then
then
Yoshihiro Akiyama against Nikki Holzen in a mixed rules or custom rules fight. So
holy crap! That's kind
Gary
of interesting.
Chana against Martin Nguyen. Yeah.
Yoshihiro Akiyama. Sexyama, right?
He's Sexyama, yep.
Yeah. Martin Nguyen as well against Gary Tanon. Gary Tanon, obviously, kickboxing legend.
Jiu-jitsu legend.
Yeah. Jiu-jitsu. I'm sorry. Yeah. Martin Nguyen, and, you know, he's fought in one forever. So, yeah, I didn't, you know, I saw that, and I didn't realize it was actually one. Big strawweight fight as well. Itsuki Harada and Ayaka Mayura. Ayaka Mayura is one of the top you know, top strawweights outside of UFC. So actually not a bad card here. And where does it air? Oh, just on like Triller or whatever?
Yeah, it says internet pay-per-view on here. And,
oh, yeah, watch1fc.com. So watch on, it's on one streaming service. Yeah. Might be on Triller too. If you look on it, depending on what country you're in, I'll bet you it's in Canada on Triller. But yeah, Sage Northcutt and Shinya Aoki is a pretty interesting fight, I will say. You know, Sage, I think fighting for the second time in one. Yeah. Third actually, coming off that win last year against Ahmed Mujtaba.
Yeah, I completely forgot he fought last year because it's just.
Yeah. And he's back to, I guess, welterweight. I mean, they'll weigh in at 185, but you know, he's at welterweight, so I don't think he's ever going to be anything, but if he is, he'll probably beat Shinya. So that is our
it's crazy that he's still only 27.
Oh my god, I feel like I saw him fight 10 years ago.
He did. It was just about 9 years ago, 2015.
9 years ago. Yeah So he's only 19.
Yeah.
Jesus. And that was when Paige fought in the main event. We got to talk about big news. I mean, hell, you talked about it on Observer Radio and hardly ever talk about PFL and or Bellator on Observer Radio, but as I think we talked about, you know, we've talked about it a few times, but they got a card now for this PFL show on February 24th at noon Eastern. It'll be on pay-per-view on ESPN+ in front of at least 30 people, one of which apparently is going to be Dave Meltzer, watching.
One of them is not going to be me, and that's not a knock on the card. It's just there's a UFC that night, so there's only so much MMA I could take in a single day.
If the show was free, I would watch it.
Yeah, if it was, I'd watch it.
I'm not paying for this, though.
And that's what me and Dave were talking about. Like, if this show was free in the afternoon as an appetizer to UFC, that would have been great, but it's not going to do any business on pay-per-view. No,
it's honestly a hell of a card. I didn't even realize, like, I don't know, maybe the prelims are going to be on ESPN+, so they're kind of worth checking out, because you've got the pro debut of Baguio Ali Walsh, grandson of Muhammad Ali. You've got Clarissa Shields fighting. You got Aaron Pico fighting on the prelims, so you know, those are three pretty good fights out of the five that are going to be airing. And then, you know, for the main card, it's all champions versus champions. It's a 7-fight main card. Good Lord.
But none of them are title fights, so they're all 3-round fights.
Okay. Well, that's almost better in a way, you know, because it'll be easier to watch. But we've got Ray Cooper and Jason Jackson. Looks like it's going to be a catchweight fight, even though.
Because it's supposed to be Magomed
Kirov.
Yeah, but he just pulled out like a couple days ago.
So Ray Cooper III, who
was a fill-in.
He won a couple tournaments, not this past year, but he is, I believe, a 2-time champion in PFL against Jason Jackson, who won the welterweight title on, I think, the last card or the card before over, God, I'm drawing a blank, the Russian guy. Ukrainian guy.
Amosov, yeah.
Yeah. So that is kicking off the main card. Then we got AJ McKee Jr. and Clay Collard. Collard, of course, one of PFL's biggest stars at lightweight, former UFC fighter, against AJ McKee, who's probably the best. I don't even know if you call him a prospect anymore, but this next one
I call the Spirit of Bellator main card fight.
Thiago Santos and Yoel Romero. Age in the cage. A combined age of about 90 between these two guys, I think.
86. Yeah, Santos is 40 and Romero is 46. So you're close.
Yeah. Could be a good fight. Heavyweight fight, Vadim Nemkov.
That's like a book idea of the story of Yoel Romero. Could be a good fight. The story of Yoel, because, you know, he's had some really awesome fights and some really God, why did we watch this type of fights?
It's, you never know what you're going to get. Yeah. Bellator light heavyweight champion Vadim Nemkov against the PFL heavyweight tournament champion Bruno Capoloza fighting at heavyweight.
Actually, on Nemkov, he just this past week relinquished the Bellator light heavyweight title.
Really?
Yeah, said he's not fighting light heavyweight anymore.
Okay, well, I guess it doesn't matter since Bellator basically doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I guess they can do a title fight now.
They exist in some fashion,
Well, I guess, now they'll have a title fight on one of these cards. Patricio Pitbull, featherweight, I think he's a featherweight champion, against Jesus Pinedo at featherweight. Impa Kazangane, another former UFC fighter. I guess he's the middleweight champion last year against Johnny Eblen, who just won.
He's actually the PFL light heavyweight champion.
Oh, okay. But he's going back down to 185.
Yeah.
Against Johnny Eblen, who undefeated fighter, who just recently won the Bellator middleweight title over, I believe, Jagard Musasi, and defended it, I think, as well. So I favor Johnny there. And then the main event, another heavyweight fight, Henan Ferreira against the Bellator heavyweight champion, Ryan Bader. So I'm looking at this, and I favor Bellator in most of these fights. I would say maybe Ray Cooper is going to win. Thiago Santos, I mean, he could win. And other than that, I kind of like the Bellator guys in every other fight, I think. But, I mean, it's hard to say. We don't really know. Especially being three rounds, that does make it a lot different. And I'm kind of interested in the results of this, but not interested enough to pay for it. Yeah. I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah,
but
I will kind of feel the same way on that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I will watch the prelims for sure if they're available here, because I do want to see I do like this Ali kid and Clarissa Shields. I'm hoping she can put it together, and Pico's always fun to watch. So so that is the Bellator versus PFL show, and we'll see if it does any kind of business. All right, and we got some news as well. Dana talked about Connor's return, and I guess the big one was him saying that don't believe what Connor says about June 29th, and I don't know what else he said.
Yeah, he just said, like, you know, Connor made the announcement without them being ready, and I'm sure he's still going to fight on June 29th, but Dana basically said it's not official until we announce it. Okay, claiming they jumped the gun, but who the hell knows? With Connor and the UFC and Dana, who the hell knows? I've got serious fatigue about when he's going to come back. Like,
well, yeah, and then the other thing obviously is whether or not it's going to be at middleweight.
What weight? Dana said we don't know what weight, who the opponent is, and when it's going to be. It's just like, come on, get y'all shit together.
What? I just saw something that we'll talk about in a minute. I didn't know
on air.
You probably figure out what it was. All right, and Aspinall and Stipe.
So Aspinall put it out there today, I believe, that he was offered a fight against Stipe at UFC 300 for the interim, to defend the interim heavyweight title, and Stipe said no because Stipe wants the Jones fight. So
that's surprising, because didn't Stipe claim that he wanted to fight in November and UFC told him no?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that wrong?
He wants the John Jones fight. Yeah,
I know he does. But I mean, that's what we all knew, but he claimed that UFC is the one that decided that.
Yeah. They want the Jones Stipe fight.
Well, of course they do. Yeah. But they don't know for sure Jones is going
to
come back.
But honestly, they have to, you know, by their contracts, they have to offer fighters a fight every so often. So this was fulfilling what they have to do. And honestly, the only reason we're hearing about it is because Tom Aspinall decided to make it public. So, yeah.
So who do you think they're going to give Aspinall?
Fuck. Who knows?
Blades?
Whoever wins Jonathan Almeida against Curtis Blades, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I figured too. All right, UFC 300 editions and main event. That's what I was kind of doing the holy shit about, because I just scanned down to your notes here.
Oh, you just saw the fight? You know, did you not know? We don't have a main event yet. Dana's supposed to announce the main event this week. I have the feeling it's going to end up being Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad. So, you know, which is kind of a dud, but they did put two big fights on there. You got Justin Gaethje against Max Holloway for the BMF title, which what else needs to be said about that? Two of the most exciting fighters in UFC history fighting for the BMF title, five rounds. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a great fight. Unfortunately,
refresh my memory. Gaethje's he's the defending champion.
Yes.
Awesome.
He beat Poirier for it.
I love that.
Yeah. So
what do they fight now? 155?
155, yeah. 155.
Which I lost you for a second there. So if you said it wasn't that I was listening, I was pulled away for a second.
155 has always kind of been bad for Max, you know, and we always worry about Max and the damage he's taken, and he's gonna take damage in this fight, but it's a hell of a fight. And then of course Jim Miller has his fight for UFC 300. It's against Bobby Green, which you know what? You know, it's a good fight. You know, we were talking last week, either Paul Felder or Matt Brown, you know, because he mentioned that. But the fact that they announced it so quick tells me that this was the fight that they had in mind from the onset. And it was just a matter of you know, making sure Miller – I'm sure Miller didn't know that ahead of time. But the way it was so quickly announced, it was probably Bobby Green had already said yes. So, I mean, and it's a fight they've tried to do so many times. And it makes sense because Green's, you know, right there in 14th, 15th in the rankings. And honestly, Jim Miller's on the cusp of breaking in. And so if Miller wins this fight, he should be ranked, which would be crazy, you know. But
Yeah. Just that's a great fight, honestly. Like, I think this card is going to be, like, we talked about it a bit last week, you know, that people might, you know, kind of shit on it. But these two fights right here, like, these are fights that are as good or better than the fights that were on UFC 200.
Shit on it because, I mean, the star power, like I said, the star power is not, you know, is not what they don't have the star power they did back when UFC 200.
But Justin Gaethje and Mac Holloway are big stars.
They're big stars. They're getting as many big stars that they currently have on the card. Are they as big stars as the guys that were on UFC 200? No. But also the people who I feel good. Who I feel are complaining about it also kind of have that pro wrestling mentality. And one of the people who are complaining about it is a big pro wrestling fan. It's like, this isn't like a WrestleMania thing where they can, this isn't WrestleMania where they can, you know, pull a Rock or a Brock Lesnar or any of these guys who are in their 40s and 50s out of the hat for one match. You can't do that in MMA. These guys got to train. They got to get cleared by commissions. And all that, you know, it's not pro wrestling. It's you can't pull those old timers, you know, these guys.
Well, they did it on UFC 200.
who did they pull?
Brock.
Brock was training for 2 months. Like
Brock was training for a year.
For a year, and he had teased earlier that year that he was going to go back to the UFC. So Brock UFC.
Did I ever tell you like? I think I knew it was all after that. UFC 187, I knew that Brock was at UFC 200.
Yeah, I've known for a long time. I knew before you did. So
okay, yeah. Or maybe it was 189. It was 189. But yeah, when we were running down the potential like cards for this, if you had like Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. Like would not even have occurred to me, but now that I see it, like I can't wait. Like that to me is a dream fight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, they did a good job getting that fight signed and, hopefully both those guys make it. And we still got a main event, that'll, you know, come at some point. Right. Or is that the main event?
No, that's not the main event. I still think the main event's probably going to end up being Leon Edwards against Bilal Muhammad at this rate.
Okay. That's tough, man. Anyways, Gaethje and I know they would not put that ahead of the Edwards Muhammad fight because that's a real title. But to me, Gaethje and Holloway is a way bigger fight.
Yeah, it's just it's probably gonna end it that way. The fact that they tried to do Aspinall Stipe tells you they don't have confidence in doing Edwards and Muhammad there. But unless they can get Duplessis ready and have him and Adesanya.
That would definitely be a bigger fight.
They don't have much else, honestly.
And Stipe would be a bigger fight too.
Because I don't know that Alex Pereira against Jamal Hill is any bigger than Edwards Bilal.
That's tough. That's close. I think Pereira's a bigger, you know, is becoming a big name. He's not quite there yet.
Pereira is, yeah.
Yeah, but Jamal Hill is not. Yeah. So, all right. Dana talked about Saudi Arabia and the 2025 media rights negotiation.
Yeah, he said somewhere within the next 4 to 5 months, they're going to start renegotiating with ESPN. I still favor them to be the UFC's, you know, media partner, and I still, my gut feeling is they'll still just be ESPN only. Yeah, they're very valuable to ESPN. They're the most valuable thing they have for ESPN Plus, so they need them for ESPN Plus. And honestly, they need them for ESPN because, you know, ESPN could be losing some NBA. Who knows? But even so, you know, everybody's like, oh, they got football, college football. From about April, you know, and especially if they lose NBA, from April until really September, you know, there's a lot of Saturday nights that need programming, and they can they can put, you know, UFC right. They put UFC right there. You know, the UFC very valuable, and they do good ratings for
shows. Do you think there's any chance they kind of use Netflix to drive up the price?
You know, I could see, you know, and of course this comes on the heels of TKO and WWE Netflix deal. Yeah, you know, we're talking about Netflix, you know, getting into WWE, and the Netflix people, we're talking about how it's sports entertainment when it comes to WWE and how that fits their alley. It almost feels like they're not ready to make the full leap into sports.
Yeah.
You know, they still want some of the entertainment side. Maybe that changes, you know, by the end of the year. Who knows in that direction? But because, you know, obviously WWE is their first dabble into that.
Well, and they've got a year to get ready for that. So,
you know, I've heard people speculate that, you know, they could add events to the schedule and maybe package some fight nights out to shop them to like an Amazon or an Apple TV or, you know, stuff like that. That's possible. You know, ultimately, I think ESPN will do everything they can to bid to keep everything under them.
I just, like I said, I do expect them to end up on ESPN as well, but I'm just thinking they'd be foolish not to at least, you know, they're gonna use those other companies.
They'll explore every avenue, and you know, they're gonna get a huge increase. You know, they're making, you know, the average annual value was $300 million. Obviously, everything, you know, that's average. Obviously, year one will start so low to where the last year is a high number. So whatever their closing number is, they're gonna be looking for a certain increase off of that number, and they're looking at possibly 2x. So it wouldn't surprise me if they get we've talked about it here. I've publicly said on here, like if they got $800 million a year at a minimum, it would not surprise me
for like, you know, 5 years. So we're talking like $4 billion.
I think they'll get 7 years.
Oh, seven years. So we're talking,
here's what it is,
almost $6 billion.
Well, here's the thing, you know, television deals for sports properties, we got to take the wrestling brain out of it. It's different. Sporting properties are going 7 to 10 years. NFL is getting 10 years. I mean, WWE with Raw, I mean, it technically with Raw and their international, it technically is a 10-year deal, but
it's really a 5-year deal.
But in theory, it's anywhere between 5 and 20 years. But like, you know, NFL is getting 10 years. NBA is probably getting 7 to 10 years. NASCAR just got 7 years. So sports properties, the going timeline is 7 years. So they'll get, and their last deal was 7 years, and I think the Fox deal was 6 years. So I can't imagine them getting anything, you know, 7 years, $5 billion overall value at a minimum. So
yeah, oh, it's good for them.
Yeah.
And we got locations for UFC 301 and 302.
Yeah, these are not official, but I'm hearing UFC 301 will be May 4th in Brazil. Don't know Rio or Sao Paulo, but Brazil. And then 302 June. Well, the Saudi Arabia show, you know, we talked about, you know, how it's getting moved from March to June. They, you know, they haven't announced an official date for June, but last week we were talking about the March 2nd show. There's still going to be a show on March 2nd. It's going to be at the Apex.
So, okay, which we kind of figured last week.
Kind of figured, but 302 I know is on June 8th. The there's talk about, you know, people were speculating maybe that's the Saudi Arabia show and they make it a pay-per-view. But Dana said that the Saudi Arabia show is still going to be a fight night. But June 8th, UFC 302 is going to be in Newark, New Jersey. There's a,
oh, okay.
There was a story that came out. It actually flew under the radar, but it actually came out a month ago about, you know, another site fee deal where they're paying $5 million to the UFC for a show in New Jersey. And they said June. They said a pay-per-view of it in June. So June 8th.
Here's a bold prediction. We're going to see Paul Felder return on that.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, he's from Philly, so New Jersey's not really.
It's pretty close.
I could imagine they have a Philly show. So I can imagine if he's not returning to Philly, it'll be in Vegas. But obviously, if Duplessis and Adesanya can't fight at UFC 300, that seems like a possible landing point.
Yeah,
assuming Connor's on International Fight Week. If Connor's not on UFC, well, International Fight Week will now be UFC 303.
Yeah.
So if he's not on that one,
you know, that'd be Adesanya.
Adesanya will be on International Fight Week,
and then we probably do Hill Prochazka on 302.
You mean Pereira Hill?
Sorry,
yeah,
Pereira. Yeah, I said Prochazka. Yeah. All right. So that is it for the news, and then we got a bunch of fight announcements.
Yeah, UFC Fight Night on February 10th. Dan Ige, he was supposed to fight Lerone Murphy, but Murphy's out, so he's now fighting Andre Feely. So that's a good fight.
That's Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Vegas at the Apex. UFC 298 Anaheim. Tatiana Suarez had to pull out due to injury of her fight against Amanda Lemos. Lemos will now fight at Mackenzie Dern. So that's an interesting one. And Anthony Hernandez, they showed it on the broadcast this past week. He was supposed to fight Ikram Alaskarov, but Alaskarov pulled out. Hernandez is now fighting Roman Kopylov on that show.
Right. Yep.
And then Rinya Nakamura against Carlos Vera on that show.
That Japanese bunch of, kid.
Yeah.
It's getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah. Bunch of fights announced for UFC Fight Night on March 16th. The show headlined by Tui Vasa and Tabura. But some fights announced. Kennedy and Chukwu against Ovince St. Preux. Mike Davis against Nathan Levy. Panny Kianzad against Macy Chiazon. Gerald Meerschaert against Brian Barberina. Josiane Nunez against Chelsea Chandler. So there's a...
Where's that card?
On the Apex.
Oh, God. Those are a lot of big fights for the Apex.
Yep.
Meerschaert and Barberina, is that a rematch? I feel like I've seen that before.
No,
oh, it's not. Okay. I think they've just fought a lot of common opponents.
Yeah. Barberina, you know, this is 185. Barberina's been
at
170 for most of it.
UFC stuff.
UFC Fight Night, March 23rd, Billy Quarantillo against Gabriel Miranda.
Okay.
UFC Fight Night, Atlantic City, March 30. Carlos Ulbrich, he's supposed to fight Dominic Reyes, but Reyes pulled out due to injury. He's fighting Alonzo Minifield now. So
that's a big step up.
Yeah, UFC Fight Night, April 6th, Cesar Almeida against Josh Friend. UFC Fight Night, April 27th, Ariane Lipski against Karini Silva. It's a nice fight at flyweight. Lando Venetta against James Lontop. And then the first fight, I think this is actually official for UFC 301, is Karolina Kovalkiewicz against Yasmin Lucindo.
Wow. And
I heard a rumor for that show. It's not official. That's why I didn't list it. But possibly Paul Craig against Cal Borjalo. So
that makes a lot of sense.
It'd be a big fight for Borjalo. You know, he's got star potential, you know.
Yeah, that's a main card fight for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I noticed one of the fights you didn't mention on the April 27th show, Mahashate against Unreal Jubilee. Jubilee is the guy that was winning that fight and then got spooked in the third round, right?
Yeah. What was
yeah.
it? Against the guy that missed, Mike Breed, and missed weight.
Yeah, missed weight and got cut.
Well, didn't get cut, just didn't get re-signed.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm glad to see he's getting another shot because he looked real good in that fight till he didn't. But, yeah. All right. So that is that's going to do it. You know, good. We actually went longer than we thought we were going to go, but you know, it's a lot of stuff to talk about, especially, you know, with that breaking news at the beginning of the show and UFC 297, which I think turned into a bigger card than maybe we were expecting. But Ryan, let us know where everyone can see and hear your stuff.
I'll be back in the Wrestling Observer newsletter this week with coverage of UFC 297. No UFC this week, so I'm gonna enjoy the weekend off.
Watch some football.
Watch and see who makes the Super Bowl.
Yeah, won't be the Packers this year, unfortunately. Although, man, it sure looked like it for.
Yeah, they overachieved this year. So
yeah, no, that was a real good game on Saturday.
You know, so I know a lot of people get emotional about sports. Sports, I think everybody else getting emotional has taught me. Just don't get emotional over sports, and I don't get emotional over sports. You know, you're like, well, that sucked, but I don't put holes in my wall or break a TV, even though my TV decided to blow out before the kickoff of the first game on Sunday this past week. At least it waited until after the UFC was over to blow
and out. And your Packers. Yeah. So yeah, I know I'm having fun watching the Jets this year, the Winnipeg Jets. They're having a great year. So, but yeah, don't get too invested, folks. Yeah. For me, I'm on Twitter X at Paul East Fontaine. You can see my takes on wrestling and UFC when I'm on there. I'm trying to use Threads a little bit more often, but it's not really catching. Nothing extra special to plug this week. I'm back on the Dynamite show after a week off. So me and Jeff Hawkins will be back later tonight on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. You can check that out, and then it'll drop in your audio feed tomorrow morning on the Fight Game Media free feed. So you can check that out. So for Ryan, I've been Paul, and Ryan, why don't you take us home like you always do?
All right. Hope everybody enjoyed the show. Have a great week this week.
Later.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.